Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Editor-in-Chief here at Money Magazine. Now, love is complicated enough, but love at a certain stage in your life where you're financially established can be a little bit more complex because of the financial aspect that you have to consider. So we would like to talk about what you need to think about in terms of money and relationships. And to help us with that topic, we have as our guest today, Michael Miller, who's a certified financial planner from advisory firm Capital Advisory, and also Catherine Coles, who is an accredited family law specialist from Parker Coles Curtis. Welcome to the podcast, Michael, Catherine.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah, so I think we'll just go to the $64,000 question. Michael, maybe we'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experience in terms of your clients and thinking about their finances when they're just started a relationship in their 50s, 60s, or 70s?
What we see in those circumstances is there's often quite a desire to build a life together, but then also have or maintain a degree of separation in their finances. And that's often driven by they've brought their financial resources to the relationship because they've had a fair chunk of their career to build those up. And they may also have children from prior relationships and things like that they would like to benefit or leave their estate too. So there's much more of that prevalence of we want to do things together and we want to make some financial commitments, but we also want to keep a degree of separation involved.
Yes. Now I'm curious though, so for example, with your clients, do you ask questions like, are you dating anyone right now? Or how's your personal life? Is that part of the regular review that you have with them?
Well, probably not as directly as that, or we probably don't need to know about the second date per se, but certainly, asking and understanding if they are in a relationship. It does also tend to, as people's relationships are becoming more serious, where we will find out about that is we're asking them about what are the things they want to do. Is that travel or purchasing homes and things like that. So I think rather than needing to delve too much sort of deliberately or specifically at that, it actually comes out as part of a regular financial planning engagement.
And do you find that you find out about the relationship before the kids, for example, or this is kind of your experience is that people are relatively transparent about their new relationship or becoming serious with their current relationship?
I think there is a lot of potential for that actually, because one of the things with a financial planning relationship is we do care very deeply for our clients, but we're also quite impartial. There's not that concern that can sometimes exist with family members about what's this person going to think, or are they going to have opinions or judge me or something like that. A good financial planning relationship will actually be built a little bit on that impartiality of, you can tell your financial planner those sorts of things without worrying about, am I going to be judged, or the financial planner is not going to be worrying about what that means for a potential inheritance or anything like that.
Yes, now you've said the magic word, inheritance. And I think when we were chatting earlier, there was a mention about kids trying to protect their inheritance, and that kind of encroaches on the personal relationships of their parents. So with us today is Catherine Coles, who is a specialist in family law. And I understand that, Michael, when you're talking to your clients about this, that you normally would engage a specialist in family law. So, Catherine, can you tell us a little bit about your experience? What are the common questions that you get asked on this?
What I find mainly is that couples haven't necessarily considered the implications of their separation in terms of the family dynamic, and that generally means any children that they've had from previous relationships. And so what I seek to do with my clients and is explore with them, well, in the event of a separation with your partner, while everything is absolutely going swimmingly well now, what is going to happen in the event of a separation? And there's kind of two pathways that could lead to. One, a determination pursuant to how the legislation and case law sets out property settlements, or two, having it set in stone right from the beginning through an agreement, a documented agreement called a binding financial agreement, what is to happen in the event there is a separation. And largely, that can be a really fantastic tool for people who are entering into these subsequent relationships where they may have already had their children, and they do have a vested interest in ensuring that the assets and superannuation that they have accumulated, that is going to be transferred to their children or pursuant to their will, whatever it might be, rather than be the subject of something contested in the event of a relationship breakdown.
So that's the key thing to understand. There's a binding financial agreement.
Yes, and that's a really protective, a really great tool for protecting people when they want certainty. In the event things do not go well, they can rely on this document that they've set up right from the very beginning when everything is new. It's a bit of an awkward conversation potentially, but generally in my experience, I find that older people who are entering these relationships and wanting that certainty, it's really fantastic for them to have that peace of mind that in the event things do not go as planned and there is that breakdown in their relationship, that they will have certainty about what's to happen with their assets.
Michael, what would be the worst case scenario? I can understand that maybe some people just don't want to talk about it until it's too late. So what would you say to those people who are kind of, no, I'll deal with it later rather than prepare for the possibility that the relationship would break down?
I think the one that we see a lot, and I think it is actually quite appropriate to describe it as a worst case scenario, is where, you know, a couple hasn't addressed it. And then some of this might get brought on by when one or both members of the couple actually, you know, aren't able to look after themselves anymore, and as a couple aren't able to look after each other. So there's then a requirement for something like residential aged care, because the thing that coincides with that sometimes is one or more of the individuals in that relationship might not actually have the capacity to make decisions for themselves anymore. So all of a sudden you've got somebody stepping in and that might be acting as an attorney. And that, for example, could be the children of one of the parties. So now you've got this issue which hasn't been broached at the start of the relationship or throughout the relationship. And you've now got an added vulnerability in there and change of circumstances. And the person who has to work through that is not necessarily actually the individual who was in that relationship. It can be an attorney who might have been a child or a friend or somebody like that, rather than the person themselves.
Yes. For example, there could be a scenario where one party is relatively wealthier than the other, and that person ends up perhaps forking out the money for aged care or probably for hospital expenses, for example. So can you walk us through a best case scenario? So a couple approaches you and they want to set themselves up financially where it's fair and equitable for both of them.
I think the best case scenario is just that everybody has considered and looked at the potential outcomes. I think particularly when we think about some of these scenarios, fair and equitable is probably more what an informed couple has decided for themselves, not what anybody else decides or thinks is fair and equitable. So I think that best case scenario is that they've actually thought about, well, okay, if this happens, what are the implications? What does this mean financially? And then, you know, actually set out and said, well, this is what we want to occur. This is how we want to approach that. So rather than somebody else having to make that decision, or they're guessing without understanding what that would look like, they're putting in place a plan for that.
I'll just add that I think it's really valuable to be surrounded by not just one expert to explore all these issues that may pop up, and to have really a team of advisors, and along with Michael as a financial advisor, and you know, myself as a family lawyer, I think also you'd be wanting to involve an estates lawyer as well, to really traverse some of these tricky and probably, you know, they're not very sexy topics, but they need to be fleshed out so that you avoid those worst case scenarios that Michael was alluding to earlier.
Now, one of the questions that I get asked about seeking professional advice, whether it's through your estate planner or your financial planner, is, Michelle, I have a very simple kind of financial circumstance. I just have my super and maybe two properties. Do I really need to go through all that? What would you say to those to them?
I'm not sure if it was Catherine or I who smiled first at the description of it's all simple. It really is, in that you've got that combination. You know, and Catherine sort of spoke about a team of, there might be superannuation rules. If there is care required, there might be social security and care rules, as Catherine's spoken about. If relationships are ending, there's a family law aspect to that, and then there is also a number of estate planning considerations. And if the circumstance we're talking about, particularly here, where there are blended families and blended families that have been created at different points in time, it's really simple. It's all manageable, but simple is probably not the word that you'd use to describe it.
I love it. It's simple until it's complicated. So what are the kind of fees that they should kind of expect and prepare for if they want to do this right? So is it, let's say, between $2,000 to $15,000, or is it relative to the complexity of their financial circumstances? How does it work?
I think it's probably a bit of both there that you've spoken about. There is going to be a relativity in terms of the complexity. I mean, if we're talking about somebody that has 8 commercial properties across 6 trusts and 4 operating companies and things like that, there's going to be a degree of complexity just from their financial affairs. It can also be relevant just, you know, what services that the people actually need can be driven by the family dynamics and who's involved. So I know on our end, it might be a case of just actually doing some aged care projections and saying, well, if you did enter into care, this is sort of what it would cost. And that might range from sort of $3,000 to $5,000 for that. But again, if people then want to look very specifically about, well, what we might do with different assets in response to that, if it is more of an immediate need, those sorts of things are going to contribute. And then likewise, I imagine for Catherine, there's going to be that complexity aspect and just how much work is involved to respond to what the parties actually need and want.
Yeah, so very lawyer response from me, it depends, is the answer. And look, I guess in the context of drafting those binding financial agreements that I was talking about earlier, Being frank, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who is going to do it correctly for less than $5,000. And so upwards of that is depending on complexity and depending on the level of involvement of other experts, because the point is we want to get it right. We don't want it to be a situation where we've gone to the time and energy and expense of drafting this document. But then ultimately we get to a situation where there might have been that, or there may be that breakdown in the relationship, and then people go and rely on this document, but then they find that they can't because it hasn't been prepared in accordance with the necessary legislation and case law. So the point is, do it and do it right, and get those people on your team that are going to service you best, so that there is that certainty that you're after in the event of the worst case scenario.
Yes, I'm definitely a big proponent of seeking professional advice, and rather than trying to save or cut corners, certainly in the area of aged care where there's always new rules and you end up, it might end up costing you tens of thousands of dollars just because you didn't know that the legislation existed and it affects your pension or your social security. Speaking of which, Michael, do you want to add a little bit more about what are the key considerations for couples in terms of their social security and pension and joining their finances, if you like?
Yes, yeah, so I think one of the big sort of, say, trigger issues that we do see is around the definition of couples and how they're assessed for social security rules. You may have a couple where their individual and or their combined financial resources mean that they don't qualify for something like an age pension in retirement. So they may not really have had a lot of interaction with that system, you know, even for, you know, two decades of retirement. But the way that residential aged care funding works in Australia is very intricately linked with the social security system and a measurement of what people have in terms of assets and income. And the big thing in that system is once you meet that definition of a couple, in contrast to family law, for example, there's actually no recognition of, you know, whether one individual might have brought assets, income, or entitlements to the relationship, you know, whose name they're in terms of ownership. It just basically lumps everything together and sort of divides it down the middle. So you might actually have your agreements in place, you know, particularly if you have two people with quite unequal wealth, that say, look, if our relationship breaks down, or, you know, if we pass away, then what I brought into a relationship is going to be passed to my beneficiaries or children or whoever that might be. That's not how it will be assessed if there is somebody applying for an age pension benefit or receiving residential aged care and paying the fees for that.
Catherine, I can imagine you sitting, kitchen table with a couple and negotiating things, talking about really sensitive issues. What are the things that you feel people should be more open about when they're thinking about the money side and the relationship?
I think it's just really important to be transparent and upfront. There's no point having secrets, dirty little secrets that potentially may be aired later on. That's only going to cause everyone grief down the track and potentially might undo any of the work that you have done to get in place an agreement. So I really encourage, when I'm talking with clients, about having really frank discussions. And no topic is off limits. It's better to have these conversations at the outset rather than let them fester and potentially cause more damage and more pain at the end of the relationship, when potentially emotions are much higher and it is more difficult to have these conversations because of that emotional element.
Frank discussions. I know it's hard to do it, but it's better to be upfront and have that resolved rather than not talk about it, and then it becomes a big Indeed. Problem later. Definitely. A lot of people don't really realize how good it is to have a financial plan in place, whether it's managing your debts or investing in a, you know, a share portfolio, for example, until you've done it. And then suddenly you feel like, wow, I'm so glad that I went through that, despite all the pain of getting the paperwork done, talking to, you know, the mortgage broker, the solicitor, and so on. Because as you said, you need a team to achieve your financial goals. So I'm curious, what is the best thank you gift you've received from your client once they've, you know, you've given them a beautiful plan to work with?
I had a client that once wrote a poem for me describing me as a graceful gladiator, and it just made my week. I'm yet to get it hung up on my wall, but it's something that I just, every time I think about it, I smile and I just think, wow, for the person to have gone to that much effort to write me a poem, I'm just so grateful that I was able to make a difference in their lives. It's a really rewarding aspect when you realize how much of an impression you've made in people's journeys when they're going through such difficult times.
Wow. Graceful gladiator. I love it. I love it. Catherine the Great and Catherine the Graceful Gladiator. Michael, you need someone to write you a poem. This is our new goal for 2022.
I was going to say, I think I am officially, professionally jealous of that. That's a remarkable sort of turn of words and a very apt description for the work that Catherine does through some very traumatic times for her clients often.
Now, it's been a delightful chat with you both. I'm certain that our listeners got so much value out of that. We talked about the binding financial agreement. We talked about the steps needed. What are the fees? And certainly that sense of satisfaction that you'd achieve once you've done it, once you've had those frank discussions. So thank you for joining us, Catherine, Michael. It's good to have your company today.
Thanks so much, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
And if you've enjoyed today's podcast, you can help get the word out by leaving a positive review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, because we've just interviewed the graceful gladiator today. Be sure not to miss out on future podcasts by subscribing to the Friends with Money podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Thank you for listening. This is Michelle Baltazar, Editor-in-Chief of Money Magazine.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy-to-understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.